Welcome. I'm Dr. Martin Mendelson, disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and thought leader. And I'm joined here by my co-host extraordinaire. Dr. Kyle Stanley is a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And if you're curious to spend two solid days with us in person, we encourage you to go ahead and check out the website for Lightside Live, a two-day experience with both of us on mental wellness in dentistry. So Kyle, welcome today.
Thank you. Yes. And I hope that our friends listening, our colleagues will join us for our live event.
Yes. Super excited. Those are always some of my favorite days of the year, to be honest with you.
Oh yeah. Same. Yes. And huge transformations.
Yes, totally. Totally.
And I think you and I continue to learn when we teach.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's like almost any teaching interaction. When you teach something, things occur to you. The people in the courses come up with things that you and I never even thought of that they're then integrated in because they're such fantastic ideas or insights or thoughts. And it's just, oh my gosh, it's such a, I'm so very humble to be able to do that when we do it. It's super fun.
So. It is. So let's talk about our topic today.
Yes.
Our topic today is things you can control and things you can't control. And This is going to be important for our listeners, I think, because it gives you a little bit of freedom. There's so many things in life that we think we need to worry about.
Yeah.
But once you find out that you shouldn't worry about the things you can't control, and if you can control it, you need to control it.
Yes.
You feel a kind of power with that. Mm-hmm. You feel like all of a sudden you have control of your life.
Yep.
And it's really made a huge change in my life.
Absolutely. And, you know, my coaching program, there's this concept called true and truth. And so, you know, there's truth in the world and then there's true for you. And they're not always the same, right? And so oftentimes, even, for example, in economic downturn situations within dentistry, I've heard many thought leaders say, you can engage in the world economy or your practice economy. And so which is it do you choose? Because you can't necessarily control what's going on in the world, but you can control what goes on within your ecosystem that is your practice. So it's hugely important. And as I often say on many different or within many different subjects, very simple, not necessarily easy. However, if we have intention about it and stick to it, things begin to take hold to a greater degree and really embrace the things we can change versus the things that we can't and therefore can let go.
Yeah, for me, I really started to understand this when I was studying Stephen Covey. Mm-hmm. So people may know Stephen Covey, the 7 habits of highly effective people. The number 2 habit is begin with the end in mind. And I've been talking about this for 15 years with guided surgery, with aesthetics. You know, if you know where the final restoration is going to go, then you should know where the implant should be. And if you know where the implant should be, then you know where the bone and tissue should be. And if the bone and tissue isn't there, then we grow the bone and tissue, right?
That's true.
So I've been talking about that for a long time. But one of the other habits that he talks about is the circle of influence.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this idea because, so he talks about, you have this circle of concern. So these are things that you're concerned about, right? This is your health, your family, your work, the weather, other people's driving skills, internet comments, the next generation, and they don't know what they're talking about, global warming, politics, right? And then you have your circle of influence. And your circle of influence are things that you can actually influence, like the courses you take, your habits, how you spend your free time, what you buy, who you vote for. And he goes on to talk about different language, reactive language versus proactive language. And this is very much up your alley with what you talk about. So you have people that say, gosh, you know, there's nothing I can do about this.
Hmm.
A proactive language would be, let's look at all our alternatives. Or something that, you know, I really learned from you, he or she makes me so mad, as opposed to, I can control my own feelings.
Yes.
I can't versus I choose. I must versus I prefer. And then he goes on to show that you have these this like circle of concern in dentistry. So let's go a little bit more specific to dentistry. You have people saying, well, nobody wants to do elective treatment because of the economy.
Yeah.
Or the practice isn't developing me enough. My town doesn't do comprehensive treatment, right?
Yeah.
Instead of taking control over your thoughts, your mental health practices, your communication efforts, your outlook. And just to kind of finish this off, what he says is the more time you spend in your circle of concern, the smaller your circle of influence gets. But the more time you spend in what you can control, your circle of influence actually expands and your whole life can change on that.
That's very, you just made my mind explode because I never thought about this before because I love Covey's stuff. And what you just said lays over or is laid over by Dr. Barbara Fredrickson's broaden and build theory, which states that basically, I'm summarizing just making it very simple for me, which is when we are looking at things from a positive perspective, we actually broaden our ability to see things for what they are. We allow our brain to consider different things. I mean, look, everybody's had this situation where you come out of something stressful and you say to yourself, why didn't I see that? Why didn't I say that? Why didn't I think of that? That's what you're talking about. That's what she's talking about. And there's psychological ramifications to being stuck in this circle of concern, because then you're just not going to think about what your influence could be, right? And so there are a lot of times where really negative things happen to us. And so when we think about how to look at things so that we're being healthy, number one, and not toxically positive, number two, because toxic positivity is just as much of a problem as, overt negativity. Because you can sit there and you can say to yourself, okay, I really don't like this. And give yourself the grace to get angry about it or deal with it and move through it. But then flip your aperture to, what are my options? What are my opportunities? What are the ways that I might be able to navigate through this that I didn't think about before? I have an exercise that my mentors, Jen Barley and Karen Sullivan, taught me called Yes And. And so it's an exercise where you're just having an open aperture without yeah buts. And you're saying, okay, I need to deal with this problem. Okay, great. Yes, we're going to deal with it. And what's next? Great. Yes. And what's next? Great. Yes. And it is an amazing exercise that allows you to open your aperture to consider other things, because the more tunnel vision we become, the less we're going to see outside that tunnel.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more specifically to dentistry, because to me, what this boils down to, and sorry, I've got a cough drop in. I've been on way too many flights in the last few weeks. So I have the adult kennel cough, as I call it. You want to not stress about the things you can't control. Mm-hmm. And if you can control it, you want to control it.
Yep.
Okay. So how that manifested for me in dentistry is I was doing a lot of implants.
Mm-hmm.
You take a radiograph at the end and you go, it's a little distal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Crap. And you feel bad and you say, well, do I take it out? Do I use a Lindemann burr and go this way so that I can make it more straight? But then I may not have primary stability, excuse me, and my next patient's coming and this and that. And and then you worry about it all the time. And I had these problems where I said, well, what? I can just control this. Mm-hmm. I started using guided surgery. Literally every radiograph I took, when I looked at it, it said, yep, that's exactly how I planned it.
Yep.
So I said, I can control this, so I'm going to.
Correct.
Similarly, when we're talking about veneers, if you know where the final tooth position is going to be, you've done a mock-up or a wax-up, you've mocked it up in the mouth, you can prep through the mock-up so that you know exactly what the thickness is. You're never going to have that phone call from your laboratory technician saying, I can't mask this color because you didn't prep enough, and then you have to bring the patient back in. So it's like rubber dam too. You know, if you have a problem with bonding and you can control the saliva, then do it.
Yes.
However, on the opposite side of this, if you're presenting treatment to a patient and they can't afford your treatment, that's not something you can control.
Nope.
You are not required to present treatment that only fits within their budget, right?
Yep.
Now, you can make changes if they say, you know, I can't afford that. Are there other options? But know that that's not your responsibility. That shouldn't be in your circle of concern.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I very much agree with that. And, you know, by the way, just as an aside, being the lab person that was calling the dentist for a couple of years, we don't like making those phone calls either.
Same. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We both do. I always forget that. So, you know, we talked about this before we hit record. One of my clients is a really successful, great clinician, solo practitioner, very, you know, does very well financially, like $1.5, $2 million practice. And we had this discussion about how this individual would really take it personally when patients didn't accept treatment. And so in terms of talking about things that you can control, well, and we talked through all this because he had all the data and so forth. And honestly, his data that he had didn't support the emotional reaction. I mean, it was his emotional reaction. It was his truth. There was something he wanted to change. So we worked through that. So it's not about right or wrong. It's just what is. Whereas if you're sitting there and you're getting frustrated about patients not saying yes, well, what are you doing about it? What element of this can you control? Well, the first thing that I would say is, what's your data showing you? Is it everybody? Is it only 3%? Is it 10%? It, you know, by which procedure are people saying no or saying yes? And so once we have that, then we can go to that secondary layer of control, which is education. So whether it's Spear or COIS or Pankey, regardless, what are you going to do about your ability to diagnose and communicate so that more patients can be able to say yes, to be able to increase their confidence through aesthetics, their function, all the, you know, decrease pain, of course. So, you know, rather than getting caught up in the moment and the angst, let's take a step back and say, okay, great. Well, I'm going to put this aside for now. I'm going to flip my aperture to solutions to focus on, okay, great. Well, what are the cases that are being accepted or not accepted? What is the pattern there? How am I doing it? How are my buddies doing in this type of case presentation? What are the successes they've had or not had? So dentistry is, as you've talked about for years, can be so isolating and so alone. How can we lean on our circle of friends, colleagues in our area or not in our area to help us navigate through this stuff, right?
I like what you said about data, because generally data doesn't lie, you know, unless there's something inherently wrong with how it was collected.
Correct.
And being a researcher, being someone who's very much into AI, all data. And so what I like about what you said is we're using facts.
Yeah.
To then analyze what we can do. And the next step would be learn how to communicate better.
Yeah.
And so many of the soft skills that dentists don't focus on are the things that if they put that into their circle of control, that would mean their circle of influence would grow. So if you said, I can control my communication skills.
Yep.
How do I do that? I take courses. I get coaching with Martin. I, you know, come to our Lightside Live events,
right.
Learn how to do crucial conversations. That's something you can control.
Yep.
And then it becomes something you can influence.
Yep. 100%.
And then you can influence something you have concern about, which is your case acceptance.
Yeah. Something you made me think about, the reason why I jumped into crucial conversations so much was I wanted to be better. I felt that the conversations I was having could have been more effective, could have been more focused, could have got to the heart of the matter. And so I picked up that book. I jumped into coaching programs and then secondary programs that were more on facilitation, which has everything to do with communication skills. I guess my point is that I really went out of my way to identify the need and identify the specific element of the need, right? Rather than just kind of throwing my hands up and saying, oh, there's nothing I can do. Well, no, there was something I could do. And it just, it does boggle my mind that you know, all these people come to me almost literally weekly. It's like, how do I handle this? Or how do I say that? And it's like, you know, when I think back now, it's kind of a wild journey. And, you know, something you said earlier about like focus and the data. One of my favorite phrases is, did you have a bad day or did you turn 5 minutes in 24 hours? Because the negative stuff has such an impact on us. And the lack of case acceptance has such an impact on us for various reasons. We want to do the case. It would be super fun. We understand how transformative it would be. Patient indicated they wanted to go forward. And then all of a sudden something changed. And that could be really devastating and disappointing. And so when we leave the office at the end of the day, what are we focused on? We focus on that or the 10 or 12 other patients that we had beautiful interactions with that were so appreciative. So we also got to be careful of the focus of the day to then think about how do we choose to leave our practices every day? Because that's a conscious choice.
Yeah. And going on with what we can control and what we can't control, this, it kind of brings me back to the triangle of blame.
Mm-hmm.
Something we talk about in my Lightside Academy and Lightside Live,
mm-hmm.
which is clinically, let's say, you can control what you're doing while you're working on the patient.
Yep.
What you cannot control, what the patient does at home,
yeah,
whether they're chewing on ice, whether they're yeah. sucking on candies, whether they're, yeah. you know, sipping soda every 5 minutes, whether they're flossing, whether they're cleaning around their provisional, right? You can't control that. So you shouldn't be concerned about that. However, what you can control in that situation is the communication with the patient. So you can control, hey, Mrs. Jones, I can control everything that I do here. And today I think it went really well. I did my best. And, you know, I think we're going to have a good restoration. Mm-hmm. However, from this point on, it's up to you and it's up to all these other factors that we can't control.
Yes.
If something like that happens, you know, start preparing them with expectations.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to redo this. There may be recurrent decay. This crown could pop off. And then again, more expectations, things you can control. If this happens, there will be an additional fee for this.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not only just working on the things you can control, but you're also, you have these two other factors that you can't control, which is all the other factors like genetics and diet and everything, and then whatever the patient's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't control those two factors, but you can control setting the expectations and communicating those.
Yeah. So you made me think when I was young in practice, I had a patient come back and it was a lower molar and he fractured his provisional. And I said, what happened? He said he went to the O's game and he was eating peanuts and he fractured the provisional. And I said, well, okay, well, we kind of talked about crunchy foods, hard foods, et cetera. We had given him post-op instructions, the whole nine yards. And he looked at me and he goes, we didn't say anything about peanuts. And I thought he was joking, but he wasn't.
Oh my gosh.
And so I remember even as a newbie dentist thinking to myself, well, I can't get upset about this because I did the best I could. We had the post-op instructions. They were in writing. It referenced food. It didn't call. He said, oh, that's what it was. It was peanut shells. He said, you didn't say peanut shells. And he was serious.
You would think that would be considered
yeah, yeah,
crunchy
yeah.
food.
Yeah, you would think.
However,
you would think.
I would not, you know, I'm always surprised on the level of dental knowledge that our patients have. Like when you yeah. show them x-rays and they go, are those my toes?
Yes.
You're going, what are you, what? When did you think we took an x-ray yeah. of your toes?
Yeah.
And even if we time. Did, why would I be showing that to you right now?
That's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. That's good. That's good.
Oh my gosh. I hear it all the time. I mean, I heard it. And then now when I tell that story, I get so many, you know, dentists nodding their heads.
That's so funny. I love that. That's hysterical. That's really funny.
So what else should we be focusing on if we can't? Well, actually, let me ask you this question the opposite way. What are some other examples of things we can't control? Let's talk about teams maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you have, probably one of the biggest problems I hear now is I have yeah. a revolving door of
yeah.
assistants, hygienists, front office team mm-hmm. members, you know, I just can't keep people
yeah.
or I can't, you know, we can't find anybody that wants to work or they're too expensive. All those things could be True, but what in those situations can you control?
Yeah, so I can go a couple of ways with this. I think the first thing is let's talk about the mindset around bringing new people on board, right? So what I always challenge people to do is, okay, so you have all these thoughts, nobody wants to work, all the stuff you just said. Every human being is unique. I think we can all agree to that. And so how would it feel if we put ourselves in that prospective employee's place and they knew that what you were thinking about was this person's probably not going to work out, nobody wants to work anymore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If it were you, how would that make you feel? And so this isn't about feelings or emotions. This is about reality because we don't know how that other individual is going to perform. And I often hear, I don't want to invest in all this training because they may not leave. While at the same time, there's a cost for not doing so, because as equally likely as what if they leave, what if they stay, right? And so it has a lot to do with mindset, it has a lot to do with attitude, and it has a lot to do with respect for another human being. And yes, you may have had challenges hiring team members. Yes, you may have had turnover. Yes, you may have had difficult situations, but that doesn't mean it's going to continue. And even if it did, that's a unique human being, period, end of story. And so that may sound very simple. It's not that easy, though, right? My favorite phrase. While at the same time, when we're talking about training, we need to structure it in a way that we can embrace things we can control. So the example I'm thinking of right now is kind of how we teach delegation. Because how many times have you delegated a task, somebody completes the task, and you think, well, that isn't what I said, or that isn't what I meant. And so a couple things. Number one, no one's going to do what you do the way you do it. So that's number one. And so is it that they didn't do it the way you would do it, or is it that they didn't do it to a satisfactory standard? And what is that standard? And did you communicate that standard? And so what I like to do is to help guide my clients around a methodology where you set up the delegation properly, because you're part of that delegation too, right? Your ability to communicate. So if you said to an individual, hey, I want to talk to you about turning this task over to you or having you start doing this task. And so there's going to be some training involved. I'm going to be sharing some things with you. And honestly, because we're having a conversation about this, this is as much about my ability to communicate as it is your ability to actually complete the task. So when I check in with you, this is as much about me checking in on my ability to communicate as it is you completing the task. What a different atmosphere that will set up, right?
Totally. That is huge. It goes back to the light side triad,
Yep.
boundaries, expectations, communications, which is like I've boiled my whole life down to basically boundaries, expectations, and communications. As you were talking, I was thinking, you could say, so that example you were giving, you the complaint from the dentist or the ops manager, whoever, could be none of my employees listen to me.
Yeah.
Now, you can't control how you listen, how they listen, right? You cannot
Correct.
control that. What you can control is how you can communicate, how you
Yes.
can set expectations. And it made me think of, you were talking about hiring. You were saying, hiring is so difficult, or I can't find anybody that wants to work, right? But what if you could make your practice more attractive to people?
Yeah.
So how do you do that? You have great relationships with your team. You support them. You dismiss problem patients. You set have systems so that this becomes a place that people want to work at.
Yes.
And similarly with that idea of, oh, there's a revolving door in dentistry, and I keep losing hygienists and I keep losing assistants and no one wants to stay here. Well, have you looked at why they're leaving?
Correct.
One of the big things that I like to talk about is people feeling underappreciated. When we had this problem at my practice, we said, oh my gosh, it's just people are coming in and out. What's the problem? And then you start doing exit interviews and you realize that people don't feel appreciated.
Yeah.
So then the concern becomes different, right? You say, what can I influence about this situation? What you can influence is making sure my team feels appreciated. Going back to your communication, practicing, learning how to appreciate somebody. It sounds so woo-woo and fluffy, but if you're not good at it, you got to practice. Just like anything. Guess what? You and I weren't good at public speaking when we first started speaking. You and I weren't good at dentistry when we first cut our first tooth in the sim lab, right? But we kept practicing and we got better at it. And so, what I really want to get across to the listeners today is that we can't just focus on our clinical skills and think that that is going to take us to the next level. It's all these other soft skills that none of us were taught, but that's where we need to put our energy. You know, take courses like, shameless plug, take our course, do coaching with Martin, do my Lightside Academy, learn some other skills that will teach you how to get above the rest. It's not about, being better than other people, but these are things that you can control that will influence things that you have concern over.
And the other thing I would say is, if you can shift how you think about these soft skills in this way, it can change everything for you. If you can truly embrace the idea and accept the concept that soft skills are skills. Skills take time to acquire, skills take practice, and skills will get better and deeper over time. Just like my skill in tooth preparation, in scaling and root plating, in surgery, whatever it is. If you can go about your business to actively make that intentional mind shift, it can change everything for you because I have seen this over and over and over again, myself included, where we don't give grace and patience to soft skills in the same way we give grace and patience to clinical or even computer skills, learning how to use, QuickBooks or learning how to use PowerPoint or whatever it is. We give that so much credence and then we expect everything just to like flow out of our mouth like flowers or something. It's not the way it works, right?
Yeah. And I've seen this, when I learned Crucial Conversations from you a few years ago, every time I practice, I get better at it. Every
Yeah,
time we do
totally.
Lightside Live, I get better at it. Every time I have to do one in person, like a real one, like IRL, I get better at it. And then eventually it just becomes part of you and it just flows. It's like, I remember when I was an oral surgery assistant in college. And I would hear the oral surgeon give his spiel about wisdom teeth. Here's the lower, this is called the inferior alveolar nerve. This nerve innervates the lower lip and chin. Sometimes when we take the tooth out, the nerve can get inflamed or moved around. This can cause temporary or permanent numbness in the lower lip and chin. And I was like, gosh, that just came out of him. I heard him do it over. I mean, he was doing it 4 to 8 times a day, right? And at first, when I was in dental school, I started practicing it. And it was a little awkward at first, and I forgot things. And then eventually it just became part of me. And this is how communication skills are. This is how leadership is.
Absolutely. And leadership's a two-way street and something I want to go back to relative to, making a place you want to work in or making your practice attractive. I mean, there was two thoughts that came to my head about that. Number one is, do you know how many times I hear, particularly lately, and I respect the statement, well, people are hard to find. They're a really capable X, but they're really toxic in the office. And so they keep the individual because of their skill, recognizing and wishing the toxicity wasn't there. Well, how do you think that affects everybody else?
So
Not
true.
only in their in how they feel about coming to work every day, but how they feel about you and how it's going to affect either subconsciously or consciously their own behaviors or actions because they know you're not gonna take ownership of it and do something about it.
Yeah. And if you protect your team, and that could be actually protecting them from another team member, but in
Correct.
general,
100%.
if you protect your team, whether you stick up for them when a patient talks poorly to them, whether you support them when they're in time of need, They will crawl over a glass for you.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, people will stay with you for decades. They will work their ass off, but they need to feel appreciated. They need to feel protected and not like they're just your little minion.
There's a man by the name of Jeff Rowe, who helped build LVI back in the day, and then who helped build Spear from day one. And I worked for him for a period of time, and he retired right around 2020. I would do anything for that man because he was such an amazing boss. He you know, looked out for me, looked out for the team, didn't put up with anything. Suraj Mahanda, same thing. Also worked for at Spear. Unbelievable human being, unbelievable leader. I would do anything for those people. And I think partially also, I hear this a lot relative to things you can control. Like we have a discussion, we have a training, I'll put that in air quotes. We come up with a protocol and then people don't do it. And then you come back and they're like, well, I don't remember talking about that, right? So talk about things you can control. What if, just throwing it out there, you handle this up front and you say, okay, great. So we've all agreed that we're going to do X from now on. Let's all go around and make sure that we have an understanding because I want to make sure I communicated well. You established that everybody understands. And then what if you looked at everybody and said, listen, we're all human beings. There may be a time where this new protocol isn't followed, things are changed, blah, 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 blah. How are we going to handle it when that occurs? And you are not the person to make that decision. You get them to say. And then when it happens, which in many cases it will, you have so much to go back on because then you could say, hey, listen, I know we talked about this at our last team meeting. We all agreed to this. We agreed that if it doesn't happen, we're going to do Y. Let's do Y. And so it changes everything because if you then have a team member that continues to go, well, I don't remember that. Well, that tells you everything you need to know. Right? But you need to take the responsibility as the leader to think globally enough to address those challenges to the best of your ability before they actually occur. So it's not like you're even addressing the challenge. I kind of misspoke. You're addressing the situation if things don't happen the way we all agreed to, right?
It's such a great example. And I never even thought about this. You know, I talk so much about talking about this, the bad situation before it happens with patients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, I have a course called the Complication Compliance Method, which is talking to patients about complications and before it happens, right? And what you're doing is telling them what's going to happen if that occurs. Now, in clinical dentistry, it doesn't happen that often, right? We don't have complications that much, but it does. Maybe 5%.
Yep.
Maybe 3%.
Yep.
Unfortunately, you have to talk about it 100% of the time for that 3 to 5%.
Yep.
And I love what you said with this because it's the same thing. You know, it's the complication compliance method, but with your team.
Mm-hmm.
You're setting the expectations and you're saying, hey, if this quote unquote complication happens in our protocols in our communication, then how should we handle it? Or you can give the example, this is how we should handle it, right? And it's the same thing, but it's so funny because I never thought about this from a team standpoint. You're like my team mentor, right?
Yeah.
I talk, you know, more about clinical stuff. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know where I kind of came to that? My dear friend, Dr. Gary DeWood, he talks about this concept, this phrase, what's changed for you? And I believe the first time I heard it, I know the first time I heard it, it was relative to patients that, you know, weren't necessarily being compliant or, you know, weren't moving forward in treatment. And he'd go back. It's like, hey, when you first came in, we talked about XYZ. You shared with me your goals for your oral health or blah, 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 blah. Now we're talking about blah, 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 blah. What's changed for you? And so I love that phrase, not only literally, but conceptually. Because if you set up that conversation in the beginning, you can go back and say, blah, 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 blah. What's changed for you? And then you shut up and let them tell you. And, you know, the older I get, the more steadfast I get in if you get the response back of, well, I don't remember, we didn't talk about blah, 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 that tells you everything you need to know. And, you know, life's too short. It's easy for me to say sitting in my office, if you're shorthanded, et cetera. But I would look anybody in the face with deep compassion and say, how much angst is having this person around truly costing you? If it's keeping you up at night, if it's causing you anxiety, if it's causing all of these things, you know, I have a, it's not unique to me. I have a coaching model. It's called the pain gain model. You can look it up on Google, and it just literally has you walk through the pain of the current situation, the gain of changing it, the pain of changing it, and the gain of actually the current situation. Cause sometimes there's a gain, even though there's pain, and that's why you're not changing. And it's a wonderful little methodology to go through and just get real with yourself around what you're experiencing and what would it cost to change and what would be the benefit therein, right? So
I want to ask you to expand on something that you said, because I'm not sure if I'm understanding it. Mm-hmm. You're saying if someone says, well, I don't remember talking about that, then that's all you need to know. Can you expand on what you mean by that?
So let's say you have because I've run into this a lot. Like, let's say you have a team meeting and you know for sure that you covered this topic for 20 minutes and there were other people there, and you even created a SOP document, standard operating procedure document. And then you did follow up and you said, okay, listen, we're all human beings. We have this new protocol. If the protocol doesn't happen to be followed in that one given day, how are we going to hold each other accountable? And what are we going to do? If you go through all that, and then you come upon an employee that's like, well, I don't remember saying that, or I forgot, or whatever, that tells you that in all likelihood, there's a bit of lack of truth to that statement. And they're in some ways, one could argue they're trying to test you, because they know darn well that you talked about it. So what I mean by that is, when you go out of your way to really get all your ducks in a row, and this is going to happen, this is just reality, and you have somebody that continues to be reticent to follow the protocols despite all this, they might not be the right person to fill that seat within your practice, is what I mean.
Okay, now I get it. And I get now why, after you said that, you followed up with, maybe this is not the person for your practice, and we need to look at letting them go.
Yeah. And it's not easy. And again, I'm going to say it again. It's easy for me to say sitting in my office, but by the same token, you know, when you're the blessing that you and I have, and other coaches and speakers have, is that we get to interact with hundreds or thousands of people. When we are in our practices full time, we have the majority experience of our own life experience, which is incredibly valuable. However, it can create a bit of fear, because we don't see the other ways, the other options, the other successes, and so forth. So, you know, regardless of who you work with, I really believe in the power of coaches, in the power of consultants, et cetera, because what they bring to the table is the visibility to dozens, hundreds, or thousands of other people that are going through the same thing. So,
yeah, I think it's this idea of unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
You know, things you didn't even know you didn't know.
Correct.
And then you have someone that gives you a little shortcut, or they give you a template, or they give you a mindset shift, and you go, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that existed.
Absolutely.
And that, for me, having had two coaches just in the last year, almost every time I meet with them, mm-hmm. there's something like that I go, oh, I didn't even know that was something I needed to know or needed to look into. I didn't never even heard of this topic before.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%.
So let's summarize what we talked about today.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the things you can control, the things you can't control, mm-hmm. and that we should focus on the things we can control, and we should try to not worry about the things you can't control.
Yes.
And I know that's easier said than done, but just like what you said, it's actually a skill.
Correct.
When my Instagram following got to a certain level, one of the bad things that comes about with that is you get negative comments. You have people telling you you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. Your kids are ugly, you know, but all this kind of stuff. And at first it really bothered me.
Yep.
And it would I would be like, who does this person think they are? And I can't believe that they would say something so rude, and to a DM or to a public comment or on a YouTube post or on a YouTube video. And what's funny is it was something that I worked on. What's funny, I went around and watched videos, how to think about bad comments, how to respond to bad comments. I went out and said, what can I control?
Yeah.
And now I learned, I educated myself on that. And it's not like it's super easy now, but it's gotten way easier. I mean,
100%.
it may affect me for 5 minutes now instead of 5 hours or 5 days like it used.
And you bring up an extremely important point, which is, it's not that you're negating the anger in this case. It's that you're able to flow through and flow past it more effectively and more efficiently, because you're still engaging with it. You're just able to move past it more effectively. And so that's a critical part, because true toxic positivity is going, no, 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 everything is fine. And that's not what you're doing. So kudos to you. It's flowing through and flow past. And yeah, it does get easier over time.
100%. Yeah. So any last thoughts?
No, I just love this topic. We could go on this one for hours. I mean, because this also has to do with us, our personal lives and our homes. And oh my gosh, it's I would challenge people to focus not necessarily on the macro, but the micro. This is something that came up on one of my webinars the other day. You know, you may be in a given place that you can't control, a physical place you can't control, but there's certain things that you can within the micro of that space. It could be, you know, if we're talking about a home space, it could be photos, it could be notes, it could be memorabilia, it could be pictures of family. There are things we can control in the micro, even if the macro is out of our realm of influence.
I like that. Maybe we can go into that in another episode and do something outside of the practice that can help us feel better inside the practice.
That actually would be a good idea, because you talk all the time, only 10% of dentists on average take any time off. So it's like, what's the importance of time? What can you do? Like, how can you look at this differently? It might be a great topic.
Yeah. Well, great. Thanks everybody for listening. If you're interested in finding out more about us, whether it's Martin's coaching, whether it's my Lightside Academy, any of our online courses, and of course, make sure to check out our Lightside Live. This is our 2-day event. It'll be me and Martin and you and a small group doing workshops on crucial conversations and changing your mindset and managing your practice and mastering your mental and relational health. It's truly a transformational few days. You can find all of that on wellnessindentistry.com. And if you have a friend that you think, or a colleague that you think could benefit from this, send it to them. You know, post this on your Instagram, tag Martin and I, let us know. And of course, we would always appreciate a review. This really helps the podcast go to more people. And this allows us to take more time, bring on great guests, and put more effort into this. So thanks everybody for coming today, and we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.